The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Greetings, nerds. This is Scene and Nerd. I'm your host, Sarah Belmont, and with me, as always, is our Mr. Producer, Will Polk. How are you doing tonight, Will?
Doing very well, Sarah. How are you doing?
Doing fine, you know, just sitting back and enjoying the last few hours of being a 20-year-old, or in my 20s, I should say, as I exit one decade and start a new decade, so, yeah.
Yeah, happy birthday, yeah, happy birthday, so hope you have a fun day and you're starting your next decade, and look forward to hearing all about it.
Oh, there it's let's not do that.
Yeah, well, I know you're taking a day off tomorrow, so you're
I'm not going to do anything crazy, so let's don't leave this on a spoiler alert. Sarah didn't do anything for her birthday. Okay. Awkward. All right, in other news besides the fact that it's not my birthday, but pretty much my birthday, Disney Mulan will be PG-13, which makes it a rating. Is this the first PG-13? I'm struggling here.
Yeah, it's like the first one for the live action films, the reboot. So, yeah, so it's, you know, we were wondering at some point would Disney ever do this, and here they are. They did it. It's a kind of a light week this week as far as news, but that was one of the ones that I know it was on our list of 2020 films that we were wanting to check out, so I added it to the rundown.
Yeah. No, I mean, looking at the trailers with some of those fight sequences, I think PG-13 is probably going to be more appropriate, and I'm still curious about that movie. And what it does in the box office.
Especially now with the well, I was going to say, when you mentioned box office, I just had to think, you know, with the coronavirus, you know, how that's going to impact this Chinese box office. I'm honestly a little bit surprised Disney hasn't pushed it off, but that virus may go on for a while, so they're just like, well, we'll just keep plans as they are.
Yep. CBS All Access expanding content called House of Brands, which will include Viacom properties like Nickelodeon, MTV, BET, Comedy Central, Smithsonian, and Paramount. Man, who cares? it's interesting to me. Like, everyone is cutting the cord because I'm curious if these quote-unquote brand packages will pay off, because I know a lot of the main streaming devices like Hulu and Amazon, they allow you to add channels.
Right.
But it's still customization to own preference. Like, you were telling me you don't have HBO because for a while there, the shows that you normally watch or would want to watch, especially since you have fairly young kids, it's not really prime for you and your family. So while me, I loved having HBO because a lot of my main shows are on that channel. So it's interesting that they are doing these packages, and we're probably going to see more to come, but I don't know if they're going to work the way they think they're going to work, because there's a reason why people started cutting cords when they noticed that they didn't watch about 75% of the channels that they had in their quote unquote package.
Exactly. And I know CBS All Access are trying, you know, because of the new Warner Media, you know, and again, you're talking about bundling it, you know, it's has all the TBS, TNT, DC Universe, all those channels, you know, in the new HBO Max package, and it, I guess they're doing this to try to keep be competitive with that new things that's coming up. But and it does open up a pretty expansive catalog. But you're right. I mean, I still have cable, and still the vast majority of channels I don't watch. So yeah, so I don't know if with this new streaming model, it seems like they still haven't learned their lessons that from cable, where people, you know, like what they like, and will, you know, probably not branch out beyond that.
Right. Speaking about not learning lessons, let's get into this Arrowverse, okay? Because yeah. I thought it was really interesting this week, or at least Sunday night, I'll just say. Because Supergirl and Batwoman have been off for 2 weeks. And I, for some reason, I did not register that they aired part ones of part twos right before the hiatus. So you watch part one. One of them, Batwoman, was a great episode. And then Supergirl was kind of, you know, in the middle. And then we take a two-week hiatus, and suddenly I'm just like, what? It's very interesting to me, the fact that both of these shows air on the same night, and they had that same kind of writing of an arc to be stretched across these two episodes. Mm-hmm. And I think arguably one of them paid off, and then one of them really suffered for it. Which, I mean, lesson learned, Supergirl's scheduling has always been its primary issue.
Right. Well, and also, the episode of Supergirl, I feel like I've been there before with Wynn's story as far as his family.
Thank you. I kept thinking about how much praise I gave Jeremy Jordan during part one. Mm-hmm. and I had to take it all back when I was watching part two, because he didn't do good. It was not good. It's like he knew there would be a break.
Exactly.
His big moment got broken into two halves.
This got broken into two halves. He's like, wait a minute. This is like deja vu. I did this, all this stuff about Toy Man in the past. And what more can I mine into this story? And it's so
forced.
Yeah. It didn't work. I mean, it really did not work for at all. And they really had such a great concept in part one of this episode with him coming back from the future as far as now in the Legion. And then we get this episode where it's just like, okay, I'm reconciling the Toy Man father. And I was it season three, I think, or four? But one of their, before he left the show. Yeah, but before he left the show to go back to Broadway, it was like, I felt like we resolved this. And so that was definitely a very disappointing part of the episode, for certain.
I completely agree with you. I really thought it was lame how at the end they were saying goodbye and he had a statement about, oh, you know, you've given me a chance to make peace with my past, and now I'm no longer Computer Lab. I'm Toy Man, the hero. And I'm just, you know, that, and that's something else. These shows, when will they realize their biggest competition is each other? And as viewers, majority of us probably watch at least one or multiple of these shows. So in our minds, we're constantly in a state of comparison, right? So it's not just that Supergirl deja vu of its own story arcs from seasons of old. It's more deja vu of things we probably have seen on The Flash. We've probably have seen on Arrow or Legends or Batwoman. And so they need to step up their game. And what's interesting about Supergirl is it really stepped it up last season. And for some reason, they just have not been able to find that same continuous and consistent momentum as before.
Yeah, I think part of it is this over-reliance on technobabble.
Yes, good point.
I mean, it just really falls flat, and it's not compelling. Like you said, season four of Supergirl was just, it had heart as far as it was very relevant because it was very topical, which I know some people rightly, some people were either like us turned on by that as far as, oh yeah, this is a great way to make the show relevant. Some people didn't like the politics of it and thought it was too political. But I mean, okay, all these shows have, contemporary issues interwoven all throughout them. So, fine. I get that.
Go watch The Flash. And nothing against The Flash. Flash does not get political. That Supergirl does because it makes sense in the term of that she's a freaking alien.
Right. And that's what made that season four works so well. Whereas with this season, the over-reliance on technobabble is just, I mean, I get lost. And this is someone who watches Star Trek who was just filled with that kind of junk. So I think it just takes away from the series. Now, one thing where it does work well, I think, is with Lex and Lena, because So that's part of their scheming. That's part of their, with the immortality code in Obsidian. I mean, that those points of the episode this week really stood out to me, and really enjoyed those moments, because one, John Cryer is just again killing it as far as playing Lex, but he and Katie McGrath play well off of each other, and that sibling dynamic of Lena just basically is leaning on Lex for her own devices as far as her ambitions and everything. And of course, Lex is just a means to an end for her.
She is a means to an end. However, there is something about the way they've developed that dynamic, and the fact that they're siblings, and we were introduced to Lena first, that even though we know Lex Luthor is devious, a mastermind, always plotting, even against his own family, there is still this same feeling, I think, and the writers have done a good job of, part of me really thinks that's his sister, he's always going to protect her. Mm-hmm. And maybe not always protect her, but always want to make sure that she's okay. I mean, he made sure that she had her memories back following Christ. Right. They've planted these seeds where you doubt, just like she does, and that's what's different. Mm-hmm. See, in other shows like Smallville or other shows in this quote-unquote universe, not Arrowverse, but Superman universe, you don't really see their dynamic. I'm sure it's all explored in the books and everything, but this is for viewers and for us people who more focus on the TV and movies. You don't really get that same empathy when you just see Lex Luthor and not the brother. And that's another thing that I was just thinking about, is that I think they chose to do that as opposed to what they did on Smallville, where it was really Lana who was that empathetic person to make viewers drawn to Lex. But it parallels Alex and Kara's relationship.
Yes.
And so this is all about siblings and the sibling dynamics, as opposed to what we've seen before, which is more the romantic relationships.
Yeah. You're right. I think that's a very good parallel as far as seeing those sibling dynamics play out for these titular characters that we know so well as far as Lex Luthor and Supergirl, and then how they have their relationship with their siblings of Lena and Alex. So That's and I think that's and that's at least for season five of Supergirl, that part is working. Mm-hmm. And so when I see those scenes, they definitely, you know, stand out, and I say, oh yeah, this show, I'm getting good vibes, and then they go and just mess it all up with this story with Brainy and him trying, you know, with this lying to everyone in the DEO and working for Lex, and it's such a drag. Even though I did like the Leroy Jenkins moment with him this week, but otherwise, Brainy's been kind of a drag this season.
There's something off there, and I can't, because I recall a few weeks ago when they started setting this up, and I was on board. I really like, and maybe this is because I'm a fan of Krypton, sue me, it was canceled, but when they delved into him and those emotional inhibitors and that idea that he was at his own crossroads from really accepting who he was and like where he came from, mm-hmm. and while also assimilating on Earth. So I thought that was interesting. And then for some reason, ever since they stopped exploring that, and it was more about the lie, and we call this out all the time, Will, because they do this in these shows, and it drives us crazy.
Yeah.
Viewers see it. And so suddenly it's no longer... we are no longer seeing the plot twist or the lies from the perspective of the main character, right? Because right. We've already seen it. We know it's coming. We're just waiting for it to drop, which is actually a great segue into Batwoman, if you're ready to go there, because yeah. I have thoughts.
Yeah, let's go to Batwoman. I think I think we hit the highlights, and there's this one part of the storyline with Supergirl with William and Kara that I just don't really want to go down.
Yeah. Let's not, because I have some, I don't really care. He's never going to be Mon-El.
Exactly.
She married Mon-El in real life. So tis ship. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
So Batwoman, you, sir, should be ashamed of yourself, because you know better than to tweet something or direct message me something that will set off my senses about what's to come ahead, because I saw this whole episode planned out while I was watching, and it was really annoying to me. I saw everything as it was happening, and I'm just like, okay, it's not the worst episode of the season, but there's something. They did not do a good job about covering up all of the twists, and I would argue there was way too many twists towards the end. The last 15 minutes of it, it's really drove me crazy, and I think they took the coward's way out.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. See, wow, okay, so we're going to we have a point of disagreement here, because I felt that this was probably one of their strongest episodes this season.
And I can completely understand why. I totally get it. However, when I say they took the coward's way out, it should have been, who's Kate's ex-girlfriend's name?
Sophie.
Sophie should have shot her. I'm really sorry, but it should have been Sophie. That made no sense to me why she was so driven, and then she just at the end had a second thought. And then it was the other guy, like that, because I already knew, I kind of figured out, oh, Kate clearly gave Beth this serum and she's just saying goodbye. And they're probably, which also that whole thing about, hey, let's go out in the middle of nowhere because there's a manhunt not happening for you. You know, that whole thing felt weird. And I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, the only way to make all of this make sense is for Sophie to kill her. And then she pops up and I'm like, okay, I'm on board with this, because that would be a tragedy.
Yeah.
And that she didn't do it.
Yeah, you're right. I see your point. That's a very, very, very fair point. And that's what took this episode from probably being from good to great. Because if they had, if they have followed your idea to and executed it that way, yeah, that would have really would have just completely taken this episode to the next level. And it was a very good episode. I mean, the things that stood out for me and the reason why I thought it was very strong was, for me, the Coward's Way Out would have been going the traditional Arrowverse trope of redemption, their whole redemption arc. And somehow Beth, Kate would basically save Alice because, you know, because she's redeemable, and yes, she's done some very bad things and whatnot, but this is my opportunity to get my second chance to save her from where I didn't do it before, especially when she learned that on another Earth, Kate did pull her Beth out of the car.
I love that moment. I really did. I liked the confrontation between Beth and Alice. However, another thing that irritated me. In the part one, Beth was a three-dimensional character. She felt like she was human. She felt like she had flaws. For some reason, I felt like she was almost too perfect. And everyone was describing her almost in this, like, very, oh my God, this is your sister. This is wonderful life. And the moment somebody is that way, you're like, okay, they're gonna have to kill her. Like, Jesus Christ, what is happening? Suddenly, because I think in a lot of the other doppelgangers, we've seen these different versions, but we've also seen what makes them a mirror image of each other, if you will. And there was something about it that the longer this episode went on, the more I felt like Beth and Alice couldn't be more different and polar opposite. And I'm just like, what? And I get it. I get, like, that life-defining moment had a huge impact. But there was something else that I thought was kind of, she could have been Mary's twin. Speaking about Mary, and actually Mary's mom, something that I didn't see coming and I thought was a good move was when the ghost of her appears as Alice is decaying, essentially, and breaking down. And there's kind of just this very interesting conversation between the two of them that I would have liked to hear more and maybe get a better idea about why the writers chose to do that and if it's going to lead into something else later on.
Yeah, that was a pretty defining moment of that episode where that I do hope they pick up on that because it especially now that Alice was the one who survived. And you know, continues to taking the blood to be able to get the serum and as far as a cure for what was going on, and so that would be a definite good way to stretch that story arc out.
Right. I mean, and Mary, man, she's got some moves.
She does.
She knows how to kick some butt.
Yeah. She definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've over the course of the first season, I've grown to appreciate Mary's character more.
Yeah.
At first, I was kind of like, but she's definitely. They're definitely defining her very well, and as a character. And another person that they've also done a really super job with, I think, is Lucius Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He He doesn't overstep, and that's also something we haven't seen on one of these shows, I would argue. And I don't want to say overstep on the lens that, hey, I'm a fan of Arrow. Did I watch Arrow primarily for Oliver Queen? No, I watched it for Felicity Smoke. Flash, Cisco, a lot of fans are diehard Cisco, diehard Caitlin fans, Harrison Wells, you have your Iris Westland, and then you have your Flash fans. But there's something about those supporting casts where you could argue they started to overshadow, they would get their own episodes. And for some reason with Lucius, he's there and he's utilized very well.
Yeah, they use Luke well. They totally do. Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, it's Kate who's the lead. Luke is definitely her, the guy in the chair. and he remains that way. But, you know, one thing that did irritate me about this episode, though, was why did they, and I know it was a very contrived thing as far as forcing them to go out into the street. And I don't know if it was just trying to, again, show how Kate is still learning the superhero thing, but her tactical decision to send Beth and Luke out, especially when there was still a price on a mark on Alice's head, was just tactically just bang your head against the wall.
Yeah, that's another reason why this episode, even though it's not a bad episode of television, there's something about it where I had to take a step back and be like, okay, this is a bit contrived. All right. I totally know in the next scene you're going to take a left. Oh, you took that left. Great. I don't like that. I like when Batwoman can surprise me, and it has. And maybe that's also part of the problem, is that they've had consecutive episodes now where they would start off slow and then nail you at the end with a little bit of a twist or something. Another thing, though, that bothered me, and I would argue, is taking the coward's way out is Dr. fucking Campbell. Mm-hmm. They are going to utilize him now as the big bad of the season instead of Alice, so that Alice gets to stay on for future seasons, which I'm not, like, sure, but lock her up. Do something with her. We can't always have her be the bad guy. But he comes out, and I don't know. It's just, oh, this. And I knew it. I knew that as soon as they were talking to that plastic surgeon, I was like, he doesn't look like his father, but I bet you he's really, the acting, I could just see through it. And so I don't like this whole Dr. Campbell thing. It makes sense, but it wouldn't be my preference.
Yeah, the whole Dr. Campbell thing, it definitely did. It did go the route of like, okay, we have, you know, we have our baddie one and big baddie two. And because, I mean, one of the things we were very concerned about with Alice's storyline early on with this series was how they're going to carry this out for the full season.
Right.
And so I think they had, I guess this is the way they will do it. And continue this character, you know, into subsequent seasons. Maybe she's not a regular, maybe she's seen as reoccurring bad guy that will show up. But so I see why, you know, see where they're, you know, added him into this, and also giving greater depth as far as the tragedy of Alice and Kate with what happened. So I see where they're coming from, but I completely agree with you that with, again, using him as the trigger man that kills Beth versus Sophie was a weak way out as far as the choice that Kate had to make, or as far as just the way the episode ended.
Yeah, and it sucks because at the same time, they made a real courageous choice halfway through when they said, no, we're going to give that serum an antidote to Beth and save her. And then you have Kate say goodbye to Alice and trying to reconcile that guilt that she's had her whole life, or not her whole life, because she didn't know Alice was alive until fairly recently, but recently that guilt with now she had a choice and she chose one sister over the other sister. And I liked that. I liked that, how that played out, but it just, there could have been a bigger impact.
I mean, it was a great, it did get me. I mean, I have to admit, even though I agree with you that it would have been better for Sophie to be the trigger person, but watching it real time, and my gut reaction when that scene was played out, especially the way it was just so well shot and edited together. I think the editing really, they did a good, just from a technical standpoint, did just a great job of building that emotional back and forth. And Ruby really tapped into, take Kate's despair and the scenes with Alice and, I guess making peace with the fact that Alice, because of Campbell and the mess that, with Malice and everything, she didn't have the opportunities that Beth did on her Earth. But right. It definitely was well edited to the point where, when the shot did happen, it definitely was a great. It was a gut punch. I mean, I was like, damn. I mean, I did.
See, I thought based on how they edited it, it was telegraphed how this would end.
Yeah.
And I mean, to each their own. You had your experience watching it, and then you totally primed me for my experience. So thank you, Will. This is all your fault.
Sorry.
But there was something about it where I was, because I think I'm almost trained, if you prolong that goodbye scene, oh, something's going to happen. Oh, they're getting away. Oh, they're happy. Oh, there's Sophie. Oh, Dr. Campbell. Yeah, of course. Because it's just...
I thought Beth would live and become like some new version of Alice or something like that.
Which, it's exactly what you're supposed to think. And I had my thoughts too, because I wanted to be wrong. I wanted to see that launch off the second half, because that wouldn't have been a straight happy ending, considering she still is Alice. Like, Beth and Alice, they're one and of the same, and they're viewed as the same. How do you explain that to people, right? That, no, that's Beth. Well, Alice is Beth. So, despite all of that, they also, and we do eventually need to talk about Picard and the Flash. However, I do want to call out one line, and they kind of, again, reneged it really carefully, but I still think that this is why we like that man, that woman. It's because guilt makes sane people do crazy things.
Yeah.
And that is the antithesis of Batman and Batwoman. And even though only one of Kate's parents died, her sister technically did die and is someone else now and trying to deal with that. I'm sure in later seasons, there's going to be an exploration about Kate and her mother, which will be fascinating. But that's another thing they're doing very well, and they did very well on Supergirl. This character, it's not your normal version of the names we know and love. It's this other version, and so you want to pick up on the same themes, but also tell a new story, and they're doing that really well on Batwoman.
Definitely.
Meanwhile, in Central City, oh, Will.
Yeah.
I fell asleep during this episode, so if you don't mind taking the lead.
All right. So this episode of The Flash this week, a girl named Sue. And honestly, I actually like this episode compared to what we dealt with last week. I wish I was even commented. I was like, you know, I wish they had this Ralph finally meeting Sue as the story last week to go along with Barry and Iris's learning more about the mirror Iris. But what parts of it were a drag to you? Was it that part, or when Iris was in the mirror pocket dimension?
It's the whole. The best part was the pocket dimension, because that is classic Flash, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Do a whole episode in there. I like the fact it's Iris and not Barry. I like that Iris is kind of telling the audience, hey, I've been around for these seasons too. I know how this world works. So right. Let me, yeah, it's good. And and this is what I don't like, and we talked about this last week. The Flash tends to get distracted by shiny objects and go off course, forcing viewers to remember what the whole point of it is when they get it back on. And the whole Sue and Ralph thing, I haven't been on board with this storyline since the beginning because so much other stuff was going on. Mm-hmm. That it's hard to get invested in that plot point, right. Even though, man, they're dragging it out. And Ralph literally has been gone since Crisis.
Yeah, he has been.
What the heck?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, bud, you're going to get your own episode in about 4 weeks, so we're just going to put you on vacation and never talk about you, and then come back to you when we need somebody, like when Grant wants a week off or something.
Grant's filming something, or he's got something. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I can't dispute that. Ralph, and the thing is, I mean, Ralph is in the Flash's universe. I mean, he's one of Barry's best friends. Mm-hmm. And so again, it goes back to the show is just too crowded. Mm-hmm. And they really need to streamline some of these other stories. Like, as I said, they could have easily had plugged in this storyline last week with instead of that whole Nash Allegra thing. Because, I mean, and especially with the ending of the episode where we do learn that Sue is also starts seeking out something related to Black Hole and how it's interconnected with what Iris is working on with Black Hole. And so
I'm on board with this Black Hole stuff.
I am, in the sense that it's something that has been in the comics very recently. So it's still kind of fresh in my head as far as the organization and what they were doing. And I think just leading, you know, looking at some of the synopsis that's coming up with Wally West's return to the show, and saying I think the title's Death of the Speed Force or something. It reminds me of some of the in the comics they were the Black Hole developing weapons by utilizing the Speed Force. And so Carver was one of the people behind the organization. And so they're using some of the more recent source material, and of course doing their own spin on it. But, I can see where she's got a connection. And of course, when Iris figures out how to get out of the mirror universe, she will, you know, all these little pieces will come together. But I agree with you that the mirror universe was definitely was well executed in this episode and was quintessential Flash. And I think that's why I like this episode, because even though, you know, as far as Barry really didn't have too much to do again this week, but you know, again, as you said, Iris has been on this ride now for 6 years as well, and she knows these kind of things. And you know, was thinking about like, okay, well, let's try liquid nitrogen to get this thing to zero, because I remember Killer Frost doing it, even though, you know, it didn't work. And it was a good way that they utilized that as far as shattering that mirror to basically reveal our new mirror master.
It's interesting. Thank you for bringing up the fact that the black hole, that's what they're called.
Yeah.
The hole of black, is based on current Flash comic storylines. And maybe that's why I'm not completely on board with it, because as much as they're driving this current recent source material, they are also in a constant state of referring to previous episodes. Like what we were talking before, deja vu, haven't we seen this before? Well, yeah, we have, but remember part B of this season, that we kicked off with Cisco saying, you know what, guys, we're screwed because everyone we got rid of is back now in this new Earth Prime. Thank you, Crisis. Yeah. And so we are seeing the same, but they are changing it in a way. And that's made very clear in this episode. So it's this weird cross-section of reminiscing about some of the better villains or villains that maybe didn't make a splash that they could flesh out a bit more into the season while moving forward with this larger arc. And maybe it's also because, I'm sorry, for the last 5 or 6 years, I'm very used to one big bad. Mm-hmm. And we always criticize it. Grass is greener always on the other side, right? So right. It wasn't so bad having one bad guy. And meanwhile, I'm like, so blood work. What, did he go away in Crisis? Where is he? What was up with that? Granted, I didn't like the first half of the season when it basically turned into Walking Dead. So I don't know. It's just, I still think, like you said, that you were getting annoyed with all of the jargon on Supergirl. Some of this black hole jargon, they start talking about it and my ears just turn off. I don't know why.
It's fine. You know, things like that can turn off and take the viewer out of an episode. And it's totally understandable. And so, but but you're right. I think with this show, it is kind of having to get used to a new narrative and a new structure with the Flash this year. But you are correct that with post-crisis, and Cisco creating the book of all the new rogues gallery and bad guys. They are using this as an opportunity to flesh out, because before they did Sam Scudder, who was also a mirror master from before. I mean, there's been, I think, 2 or 3 different people who've used that moniker. And so this time they're actually using it, you know, a new way. And of course they're doing a gender twist to it, because it was Evan McCulloch in the comic instead of Eva. But it gives them a whole new lease on story and like I said, I think it has great potential, because you know, with this mirror universe, because one of the things about Iris that we're seeing is this just a sort of doppelganger as far as just, you know, the Eva created or a evil Iris to come out, or is this like splitting Iris in half, that, you know, the side of her personality that more aggressive and more decisive part of her is out in the world with the Flash, whereas the more compassionate and part of her is with Eva, because she was, you know, trying to help her get through her mental state as far as being stuck in this mirror universe for six years.
Yeah, they, even though it's kind of cliche to have a storyline like this, like I have my doppelganger and I've been replaced, but I can't tell the people I care about. We've seen that on numerous shows before, but the writers are doing a really good job with mirror person version of mirror doppelganger of Iris West, because there are moments when you watch her, whether it's interacting with Barry or with Nash, where her excuse is very legitimate. Uh-huh. And which, like, it tells you, no, this duplicate has access to Iris's memories and knows, which, however, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Why does Nash know about Jesse and their kid? Like, is it Jesse? Nora. Why did Nash never met Nora?
He did. No, he did not. Because it was last season. It was Sherlock Wells.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah.
That was weird to me that he instantly was. I mean, I don't know. There was just something off where I'm like, why would he be so okay with that, dude? I didn't feel like they had a heart-to-heart. Nash literally spent the first half of the season in a cave digging up something.
Yeah, digging out. Yeah, he was digging out the anti-monitor. Yeah, so that's a good point. That is a gap. And I guess maybe it's being around Star Labs. He heard them talk about Nora, but and also, I guess, trying to get, maybe throw us off the trail as far as, or maybe trying to help explain his guilty feelings about Allegra, who is probably his daughter from one of the prior Earths. And so maybe that's just sort of way of sort of saying, hey, you know, if indeed he's feeling guilty in as far as Harry being lost on Earth 2 and it's not being Thawne, that maybe that's how they're trying to justify that by them having that conversation. I still think that somehow this is Thawne.
I did recall that last week when you mentioned that being an alternative. And when I was really focusing on those scenes with Nash this episode, because I wanted to see if A, the image would appear. That's what I'm calling it, by the way. And then, and if we got any hints. Now, did Harry wear glasses?
He did.
Okay. Because if it was Harrison Wells, why wouldn't they put him in the wheelchair?
Yeah, but that's to put it to find a point on it, you know? If they do it that way, then it's like it takes away all the suspense.
Because,
you know, this is the Flash. So they love to keep the audience guessing and trying, you know, that's one of their trademarks is, you know, we got to have a puzzle for the audience to figure out the season.
And even, well, you know, but I think you've already figured out. I think that would be the twist. Mm-hmm. You know, they're setting up a mystery. And Thawne, a Flash without Thawne. I can't imagine that show because that character has such a presence. Man, apparently he went over and made a mess on things for the Legends. So, yeah, that character needs to be explored. But yeah. I don't want to dwell on this point too long because we do have to talk about Picard.
Yeah.
But I do feel as if you figured it out, which makes this, what, the fifth twist on Flash that you have called out ruined for me and probably our listeners.
I could be completely wrong, and it could be somehow Harry figured out how to save himself, especially since his intelligence is coming back. So we'll see.
Oh man, maybe we just, I think we all are Cisco at heart and just want it to be Harry.
Yeah.
But it's gonna be Thawne because Thawne is necessary for this show. But yeah. Oh man. How about we go on to another show that I'm sure you'll ruin or find a way to ruin? Picard.
Yeah.
So we're traveling, Will. We're
traveling. Yeah.
We're traveling. Kind of a side adventure though, if you would ask me. They do connect it to the overall arc by stating at the beginning of the episode, this is where Picard was when everything went down on Mars.
Right.
And then he, of course, returns there and also is kind of having his own redemption arc because mm-hmm. they're tying it to this boy who he was going to come back for and he never did. Man, talk about father abandonment.
Hey, Starfleet officers, they have a way of doing that, but
oh yeah. Picard is no saint.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one through line that has been very clear in this show. This is Picard is definitely not a saint, and I thought it was an okay episode. It didn't do much for me, to be honest.
Thank God we're on the same page.
Yeah.
I'm so worried. I was like, Will's going to be mad at me because I was just, they are still in a state of getting everything to moving things forward. So I don't feel like we're wasting time. Granted, it's just slow right now. And I'm waiting for something to hit or something to really twist. I mean, what's going on with Narak? Narak, they're fleshing out more and more. And they're doing, I would argue, a pretty good job about his whole relationship with his sister. Versus his relationship with Soji. Is it Soji?
Yeah, Soji, yeah.
Soji. And I think there is some feelings there, and so they are making him more three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And however, I just, man, Picard, get your crew and let's get this adventure going. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things. So you know, I want to, you know, with Narak and his sister, I don't know that every time they. It's just kind of creeps me out. It's too incestuous sometimes as far as
that is Peyton List. Peyton List, she's the one who is doing that. And I don't know if she's doing that of her own, like, hey, this is how I'm going to act it, or if the directors are directing her to do that, because I agree with you. Yeah. That is very weird.
It just, every time we're on screen, it just makes me uncomfortable. And so when I watched their dynamics there, so I'm like, I'm glad I'm not the only one that feels that way, because I was like, am I seeing something there that's not there? But
another thing about Narak though, and the one thing that I felt like we were getting momentum with was we finally get it. Okay, why he's going about Soji the way he is because he needs her to find the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I mean, call me stupid. I don't know. I figured out so many episodes this week, so I screwed up on one. I did not see that coming. I didn't really get it. I didn't really get why he was after her. But it does feel as if the writers are also starting to create this idea that she is a ticking time bomb.
And
I like that because it feeds off of the destroyer myth that we heard about last mm-hmm. week.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely something that they are building there, and it gives a reason why the Zatvesh wants her.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things are coming together as far as that. But the other thing that really bothered me about this episode was the warrior boy. That, I mean, you had these badass nuns that you could have used in your on your quest, but you end up just, you know, going back to you know, the same old gender stereotypes, and I'm sort of like, okay, well, you know, come on, Star Trek, do better. But that story, I mean, I saw it from the very beginning, whenever it first came on, that he was going to grow up, and
yeah,
you know, and so that was one of those things where, and that's why I guess this episode was kind of like for me, because it was so telegraphed, and so. So you had that, and then there was the scenes there in the village where Picard, you know, takes down the Romulan's only son. I guess that kind of worked, but again, I think you may have mentioned it before, and it was definitely jumped out to me again, how Mandalorian-esque it was. So so it's just like, oh, I just saw this on The Mandalorian.
It really did. There was something very Western about this episode, which continues to drive home that parallel, and it's hard once you see it, you can't unsee it, so it kind of is like they're not intentionally doing it, but you just find like, huh.
Yeah,
I wonder if maybe their writer's room were across the hall from one another. Maybe, I don't know.
I don't know. Or maybe they got inspired by Seven Samurai, or the Saturday used to be like the other thing about the Romulan warrior. He, I can't remember his name right now. I'm blanking
Computer
on it.
Lad.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm blanking on his name, but he just reminded me. I couldn't. Maybe it's just because I just watched too many of these, like the Kung Fu theaters on Saturday afternoon growing up as a kid, but I just couldn't get past his makeup. It just really, really, really bothered me. I kept thinking about
it. It was pretty bad. Makeup on
it. So, yeah, but the one redeeming part of this episode was seeing Seven and Nine. And I was wondering when she was going to come onto the series. Seven was a character from Star Trek Voyager. She was another former Borg who was able to get out of the collective and was a very pivotal character through the balance of Star Trek Voyager's 7-year run. So it was good to finally see Jerry Ryan come on to the scene. And I loved her lines, like, Picard, you owe me a ship.
right.
Yeah. If we had a filler episode or a bridge episode before we get to our next adventure on Star Trek Picard, you know, this one was it. I mean, it had all the feelings of a filler episode.
Knock on wood that this is it. I mean, and we need something. The next episode really needs me to put some pieces together, set up some more mystery, or really just not even answers. And don't get me wrong. It's not that I want answers. It's that I want progression, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I still go back. They did that very well in the first episode, arguably the second episode. And right now with these last two, I'm feeling a bit of a dilly-dally. Yeah. Or a bit of meandering happening. So I want to see more progression. I want the crew to get together. Like, and that's what always drives me crazy about these mission type, whether it's a show or a movie, is you spend so much time putting the crew together that by the time you get to the mission, it feels really quick and a bit anticlimactic.
True. Very, very true. That's a good point.
Yeah, well, I guess that's it for us tonight, everyone. Will, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me at Will M. Polk, that's WILLMPOLK.
And you can find me at SJ Belmont, SJBELMONT. Please follow our crew on Twitter at Scene and Nerd. Friend us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, but most importantly, rate, subscribe, and comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Good night, geek out. You're welcome.